I'm Judy Saint. Oh, thank you. So everybody should know that we are recording this meeting. I'm Judy Sanders, and I'm going to introduce our guests. But before I do, I want to make a couple of announcements. One is that because we are recording this, if you want to listen to it again, if you wait a couple of days, we'll probably have it on our senior website. And then you can listen to it again, or people who have missed it and want to hear it can also listen again. Then I also want to remind people that if you want to go to our national convention in New Orleans, then you really need to register by May 31st, which is coming up next Tuesday. And then you'll get all the information you need to go to New Orleans. And there still is room at the Sheraton Hotel, which is the Overflow Hotel. Our senior division will meet on July 7th. And it'll be in the agenda. The room number will be in the agenda. I don't know what it is. And we'll have lots of conversation and meet each other. If you wanted to go to convention, but you can't come in person, don't forget that you can sign up for the virtual version. You won't be able to do everything that you could do if you were in person because we're in person, we won't be able to broadcast everything that we could have as we did in the last 2 years. You will be able to hear the board meeting, all the convention sessions, the general sessions, and the banquet. And there will be special door prizes just for virtual attendees. I guess you could consider those of us in person. We're going to have our own door prizes too. So everybody can look forward to that. And the virtual registration is free. The in-person one definitely is not free. So I hope everyone will be a part of the convention. This is our last call for this year. And so I'm glad that those of you who are here could join us. I want to thank the NFB of New Jersey for setting up this call. We really appreciate it. And I would like to introduce our speaker today. His name is John Wick, and he is from Nebraska. John is going to tell us all about himself. And he's going to talk about exercising. You know, most of us look for a reason not to do that. He, I think, is going to make us feel like we all should. And John can be very proud of his accomplishments, so I know he's going to tell us about them. And I'm going to suggest, John, that you leave it. You can make the decision whether you want us to hold our questions till you've said what you want to say, or if you want us to ask questions as we go. But I want to tell everybody that if you do want to ask a question, whether, you know, when he says that you can, please either raise your hand, and you do that on your computer by hitting Alt Y, and then what'll happen, and then, or if you are on your iPhone, someone else is going to have to tell you how to do it. And the Macs, I don't know. So, Janie, do you want to talk about the other ways to do that?
Sure. If you're on your iPhone, you go to More. It's at the bottom screen. It's on the home screen, and in the More, swipe to here, raise hand, and double tap that. And then when you want to leave your hand raised, go back a screen so you're all set to unmute yourself. Otherwise, Miss Ruth, our wonderful host, will unmute you either way. So okay.
So if you want to have ask a question, please do it that way. And I know we have at least one person on a Mac. So I'm going to suggest, since I don't know if there's anybody here who can tell you how to do it on a Mac. We know it can be done. We just maybe don't know how.
I have it. It's Command Shift Y.
Oh, well, you know what you're doing. Okay, good yeah. for you. All right. So you can unmute yourself if you would like to ask a question.
Judy, I would prefer to wait till the end. Otherwise, you pretty much you don't get through and you
good.
Okay. stop in the middle of it.
So we will
I'm
do
happy
that.
Happy to answer any questions at the end. So
yeah. All right. So everybody, wait till the end. But when it is your turn, please introduce yourself and then you can ask your question. So I'm going to turn it over to John now, John Wick, and help us be physically fit. Take it away.
Okay, well, thanks, Judy. Well, it's a pleasure being here and I appreciate being asked. I want to thank Judy and Wayne who reached out to me and my kind of topic, I just said, running and walking, being successful despite being blind. So, you know, up front, I've been blind for 33 years. And I thought I would really, I first want to start out to check the, how I'm sure everybody here is happy and having a good time. So I was going to tell you a little short story. It was Bob. Bob was in his late 60s, and he had lost his wife about 3 years ago, and so one day he walks into his private country club, and he had this beautiful trophy blonde gal about 25 years old and was hanging on his arm and smiling and doing all the right things. He went around and introduced her to all the people, and his buddies were just dying. Says, how would he get this beauty like this? And so finally she broke away from it and they said, Bob, what is the story in this? How did you get this beautiful lady? And he said, well, I mean, your girlfriend. He says, no, that's not my girlfriend. That's my wife. Well, how did you get her? He said, what did you tell her, that you were 50? No, he said, I told her I was 90. So you guys didn't catch that? Hello.
We did, but you see, the problem is you can't hear us laughing because
we're all muted.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, anyway, I
muted everyone. Sorry. I'm sorry. I muted everybody.
Okay. Well, I gave that joke out at Kearney at the Nebraska Commission for Blind and Visually Impaired, and they got quite a bang out of it. So I thought, gee, I really failed, but then I forgot you were muted. So anyway.
So now you know we laughed hysterically. I'm going to mute myself.
Okay. Thank you. I wanted to just comment. About 3 weeks ago, I got an email that I thought, if for all of you think exercising is tough, it was a commencement talk by a past naval SEAL, and he went on to talk about first of all, if you want to change life, first of all, the thing you got to do is make your bed. So because when you come home, at least if you had a tough day, you got a bed that's made. Well, anyway, he went on to talk about how tough it was being a SEAL, and they talked about if your uniform wasn't right, they throw you into the water, and then they would bring you out, roll you on the sand, and I'd call that. I'm sorry, I went blank. Anyway, sugar cookie. They call those sugar cookies, so they had to walk around with all that sand on them. Or in the case if they didn't, their uniform wasn't just right, then they would make them work out 2 extra hours. But anyway, it just, I guess what I'm trying to say, and I'm just kind of joking with you to say, you know, see, just think if you were a Naval SEAL, how tough it would be. So I'm hoping that we do get, and I didn't mention Judy, if there's a way of get some idea how many people there, I don't know how many people is there, but if how many of them do have some kind of a workout system program today?
So, Ms. Ruth here, we have 16 people participating. If anyone works out, would you please raise your hand? I work out, I'm raising my hand. And I see Karen has raised her hand, Karen Jernberg and Kim Brown, Linda DiBernardinis, Barbara, Judy, well, a lot of people. So about half.
Half? That's pretty impressive.
That's
pretty
good.
Impressive.
Yes. Okay. Very good. We can all lower our hands now. Thank you, Ken.
Good. Well, thank you. I have worked out. I have worked out and ran for 48 years. I went back and it just one of those things. I got started and. I, of course, with the exception of many, many eye surgeries and so forth, but most of my workout today is in my home. I have equipment, and I'll go over that in a minute about what kind of equipment I have and maybe what you want to consider if you don't have equipment or whatever the case may be. Judy mentioned it'd be kind of nice to know what impact has had on my children, and I will go into that. I can just give you a little bit of peace. My one grandson and his wife, who are just, they're both, well, they were 23 years old. They both just finished doing the Boston Marathon. So I guess you know what kind of runners I have in my family. I've been visually impaired pretty much for my whole life. I mean, my vision... At age 23, I had a detached retina, which ultimately did not work out. I lost the vision of my eye. And then at age 40, I had a cataract. And then age 50, I had a lot of pressure. And at the end of 88, I was diagnosed with epithelium downgrowth, which is a rolling up of the corneas, and that was the beginning of the end. I went out the night before, and I just had this feeling. I went out and drove golf balls, and that night was especially good. I could see golf balls out there about 200 yards, and probably the biggest mistake I ever made in my life, of course, it was directed by a medical doctor, ophthalmologist, but they thought they could put a little slit in my cornea, and that would help relieve the pressure. Well, that was the beginning of the end of my vision. I, like I said, I had probably 20/25 in that one eye, but they said I'd lose my vision if I didn't get the eye pressure down, and... So I went ahead with it and ended up in Oklahoma City at the D. McGee Eye Center. And I got there, I went into surgery. I had six surgeries while I was there. And had a lot of powerful drugs. And the worst meal of the day was breakfast when they brought around the breakfast. I just couldn't hardly hold it down. It really affected me so much. At the time, I was director of business services for a 470-bed hospital in Omaha. I had five departments, 125 employees, and I really had kind of the world by the tail. I had a reputation of cash flow, ability to get money in, and in fact, we had a bonding company that was there too. We added on a wing. And they said that was the best cash flow they ever saw at any hospital in the United States. So I ended up spending a lot of time in Western United States helping all CHC hospitals to enhance their enhance their cash flow. Another thing I did that was extraordinary was we had a program called MAC, and it was kind of a gatekeeper, but they were all RNs. And what we enabled to do is, instead of a doctor calling three departments for a lab X-ray and EKG, they went to one nurse, took the order and all that, and we were before our time. There was no question about that. We thought about franchising it, but anyway, that's what I came off of. It was a tough time in my life because I loved what I did, and so having to leave that job. But that was really the beginning of the sadness, you know, was that I lost my vision on top of it. I spent a year of just really going through hell, and one day I was sitting there and I said, you know, John, you're going to either sit here the rest of your life or you're going to go out and cause something to happen. Well, fortunately, I had a good friend who was a business manager at another hospital, and we had worked together, we traveled together, we had done a lot of things together. And so I went out there and done consulting work for a period of 10 years. And that was enjoyable, but I only was there 1 year when I lost my vision, totally lost my vision. And so I began learning technology, and I had some volunteers that would read things for me until I really got very more technically sound. And I enjoyed that. He then moved on, the business manager moved on to Albuquerque, and I didn't want to be there myself. So I decided, I'm sure you've all heard about HIPAA. I done to the two largest organizations, social agency in Omaha, Lutheran Family Services and Catholic Charities. And then after that, I went on and done pay relations for Department of Defense for about 2 years. At that time, then I done that, and then I got on board of a organization that employed blind people, and it was through the government. It was called the Ability One program of the government. And while I was still a board member, we had problems with the contractor. The business had the employees and the contract, and they had the building and equipment. Well, they wouldn't cooperate with us, so I went into D.C. with the president, and the second time in, I went in front of the purchasing committee of the government and told them that we were not compliant, we needed their help, and we figured that was our only chance to get them out there and force the contractor to be compliant. Well, that happened. We went out and borrowed $1.4 million, leased a building, and I spent there 9 years. Then I became director of fund development for Outlook Nebraska. Now, all this time I was blind, and the first 3 years, nobody had a clue who we were, and I got a lot of people in, went out and seen a lot of people, and little by little by little, we kept getting more foundations and people, donors that supported us. Well, this went up for 7 years where we just kept, and finally we decided we wanted to expand our organization and for more community services such as technology training and tours and things like that, marketing, a lot of different things that would be beneficial for the community and our employees on top of it. So we went on a capital campaign. I led the raising. I don't want to say I led by myself, but I led the raising of 1.975, 25,000 short of $2 million for this fundraiser. And I done that being blind. I, of course, done most of the writing the grants, but a lot of us going out and seeing people, and we 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 raised about $250,000, and then we were having trouble getting more in. So I was became aware of a foundation in Lincoln, and the two sisters lived in Omaha who were on the board. And I finally got them in after about 4 months, and they came in, and the woman of the foundation, the wife, had lost her vision just before she died. And so they were pretty close. Vision was kind of important. And they asked us what we want, and we said we needed a lead gift. Well, what's a lead gift? We both swallowed, the president and I, and we said this. We said we wanted $750,000. And they sat for a minute. Pretty soon the one said, shoot the moon. Of course, we still don't know today what shoot the moon meant exactly. But the bottom line is we applied for this $750,000. We got $500,000 as a lead gift. That opened the door for another $230,000. And then we got quite a few $800,000 plus some $50,000. And, you know, when I left there, when I retired, my ninth year, you know, really beginning to have the support. And you know, one thing I can honestly say, never did I have a problem where somebody said, John, we don't want to give you to you because you're blind. Or, you know, I don't see how you could do this because you're blind. Well, you know, never. And I tell you, I met a lot of important people in Omaha over this. And so I felt really good about what I accomplished. I think I felt good as a person. I felt good, but I felt good as a blind person that I had the capabilities to get to those people that had the money, that believed in the organization and me. And so anyway, on the day I left, it was my exactly ninth anniversary, and it was the same day of the John Wick movie, Chapter 3. And so the people there, they done it up pretty well. They put a roll-out red carpet, and I had a director's chair, the organization knew that I had done a lot and was successful. They called the World Herald out, and I couldn't believe it. The next day, they opened up the paper, and here was a color picture of me talking about all of my different accomplishments. And again, I really focus on this so much, the fact that I was blind, that I was able to do this. And it was, it was very much respected. And the board of directors, well, I'll talk about that later. The board of directors made a nice at the end. They had a big open house out at a country club. And I'll tell you more about that regarding my kids. Sorry, I had to wait just a second. I have to get caught up here. I retired at age 78. I'll go on my running for a little bit. I ran a lot before I lost my vision, and my vision was always a little bit on the short end, but on my one eye. But I could see well enough to run, and I ran a lot of corporate cups. I ran, in fact, 22 corporate cups, which is a 6.2 mile race. I ran 12, I think, with my own vision, and then I ran 10 with runners. And if you've ever been out running and in place with 10 to 12 runners, and most of them are not very, very experienced, they'll stop right in the middle of the road and tie their shoe, you know, and that's not a very healthy situation. When we scolded a few people on the way over the years, but I done a lot of 10K races, which is 6.2. I won my age group at 70, in a 3.1 mile race. It was probably one of the toughest courses in Nebraska, and anyway, that always looked forward. My grandkids, my two grandsons, they love to run this place down in Ralston, but the first mile is just ungodly hilly, and then anyway, we always had a lot of fun doing that. When I lost my vision, I put an ad in the paper about looking for a running partner, and believe it or not, my neighbor just a few doors down saw it in the newspaper, and she called me, and we ran for 17 years. We went out twice a week and ran quite a few races, and we figured up one day that we had run over 4,000 miles. And I would say today that I probably have ran over 8,000 miles over my career. And I had a nurse that I ran on weekends, and she ran about 8 corporate cups with me. And so, like I say, I've done a lot of running after I lost my vision. I ran my first marathon at age 42, which is 13.1 miles, and I ran that in a time of 1 hour and 37 minutes and 45 seconds. It was funny, about 10 years after that, my son ran, not the same course, but ran a half marathon. He had to beat me. He ran a 1 hour and 36 minutes. But then I ran the Lincoln Half Marathon at age 65, and probably was the best race I ever ran. Again, 13.1 miles, and I ran the race in 2 hours and 7 minutes, and 7 seconds. I ran that race, and there was 22 runners in the 65 to 69 range, and I finished 13th. And which I really felt really good about. And I got home, and I had a friend who had had a stroke, but he still was very active, worked, done Excel spreadsheets and et cetera. But Bill, the glass was always half empty. No matter whenever you talked to Bill, the glass wasn't full. And I said, Bill, guess what? I ran the Lincoln Half Marathon today, a time of 2 hours and 7 minutes and 7 seconds. And most importantly, I finished 13 out of 22 runners. And I was looking almost for an applause. You know, I was so high at that point yet. He thought for a minute and he says, well, what you're telling me, you were the 13th worst. So he really took me down a little bit. Then I realized, well, maybe it wasn't as big a deal as I thought it was. But anyway, it was quite an accomplishment running a half marathon blind. I ran it with my son, and so it was. I ran my last race 4 years ago in downtown Omaha with a medical student. It was a 3.1 mile race in about 34 minutes, which at 78, I felt I was doing pretty well, done pretty well, but it was fun. I miss it, but then of course COVID came into play, and so that made a difference. Today, I pretty much have gone over years of body equipment. I have a elliptical machine, which is I have in the garage. It's so huge. But anyway, it was about and I want to bring out here about $1,500. I paid $250 for it. I have a treadmill that probably is a $1,500 treadmill that I got for $200. I have a special bike, and it was, it was about $800, and I bought for about $125, and then I bought a new bike about 25 years ago. But what I'm telling you is, the first thing you'll say, well, it's too expensive. But you know, if you watch the paper and go into Craigslist or eBay or whatever the case may be, they're out there. I mean, the biggest use for treadmills and bikes and so forth most of the time is for to hang clothes on. People go out with the intent of going to do something, and then they do it for a little bit and they get tired, and then they give up. So you can buy them pretty reasonable. I have an Airdyne bike. This one I told you I bought for $125. It was about an $800 bike. That may be the best piece of equipment for you as far from a safety perspective. It's got arms and legs on it. And so you use your both your arms and your legs, and there's all the different companies of brands that do that. But I would highly suggest that because it's safer. Now, the elliptical machine, if you miss your feet getting onto the pedals, you can about 2 years ago I got a wound on my shin that went kind of to the bone, and it took about 3 months to get it healed up. There's where you got to be careful about the elliptical machine if you miss the pedal. And the treadmill is kind of dangerous at times too, because especially if you forget to tie it to your waist, the string that cuts the power. But even that, they can be dangerous if you start going faster than you should, or whatever the case may be. But my wife has a machine, and it costs less than $100. And it was, I think it's like CUDII, I believe it is. And she sits in a chair, and she does about 1,000 steps a day. And so there is pieces of equipment out there that are not near as expensive and maybe as much as what you need. I mean, you never should go out and consider exercising without going to your doctor, because I had an AFib last year, and where your heart goes out of rhythm, and I thought, well, they'll just take me in and put me back in rhythm. And he says, no, I don't think we should do that. He said, I think if you get so tired, have no energy, whatever you know, then we'd take a look at it. But he said, there is people who don't get off the table, putting it back into rhythm. So that's not case in all. But anyway, so I have not been put back in rhythm. I in a minute I'll tell you, I do work out an hour a day. And he said, the best thing you can do, my cardiologist said, is to work out an hour a day. He said, work. And that will do you the most good and help you health-wise. I start each day out about 10 minutes till 6. I make my breakfast either I have oatmeal, or I fix a couple eggs and some toast, and usually have an orange or whatever the case may be. Go downstairs, get brushed teeth and that kind of stuff, and get on the either one of the machines and for about 50 minutes. And then I usually lift some hand weights, and then I do some push-ups and head for the shower. I mean, I love what I do, and I feel blessed that I have that opportunity to do that. I do go out and walk once in a while with my son or daughter-in-law, or my daughter just left to go back to Colorado, and we walked yesterday for a little bit with her. But I my one RN doesn't come out anymore. It just, you know, the COVID happened, you know, and we haven't got back to do it. But I like what I do. I enjoy the hour. It's convenient, and I think it's healthy. And like I told you up front, I probably get in somewhere close to – I probably – have walked or jogged over 8,000 miles and never been hurt, never really been injured. I fell once on the chair, my easy chair, and hit my chest out on it. And I think I hit the floating rib, and I had 2 weeks I couldn't run. but I never was injured to any extent. I think the main thing about exercising, don't try to say, well, I'll do it tomorrow. I know I'll do it tomorrow. Well, set a date. Say I'm going to work out Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Then I would work out Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and stay with it. Make sure that every day that I do that, and because otherwise you're going to think of reasons. You're going to have interruptions. I kind of like to do it early in the morning for the simple reason that takes away your excuse. You get up, you eat, you exercise, and then you go on with the rest of your day. I think when I talked to Judy, we talked a little bit about your family. What's your family done? Well, my family has far exceeded me. My son was done cross country, was an outstanding cross country runner, and then he took up soccer. He had never touched a soccer ball until he was a freshman in high school, and he was all state when he was a senior. He went on and played college soccer. Then he started teaching school. He started Blair High School soccer, and within a period of about 4 years, he won 2 state soccer championships and played for 3 more. And in those days, it was pretty much all Class A because Class B didn't have soccer. And about 15 years ago, he was named the 8 top best soccer coaches in Nebraska. So a boys soccer coach. And so he ran the Lincoln Half Marathon with me, and I ran quite a bit with him over the years. Then I talk about my grandkids. They really got into it. They got to be freshmen in high school. They started running, 7th and 8th grade. I said freshman in high school. I meant 7th and 8th grade. And they ran 22, they're twins. Alec and Evan are twins. They ran 22 races those 2 years. Alec won 20 of the 22 races, and Evan got like second or third. And I told him at that time, you know, your mom, your dad's a teacher, your mother's a dental hygienist, and, you know, you will get college, but you'd be better off if you could get a scholarship. Well, they went on. They ran in high school. They finished in the top 2 or 3 mile and 2 mile at the state track meet for their pretty much the 3 years. They were there 4, but they really were very competitive in ran at the state track meet. They gave it the highest scholarship that you could get at Doane University with the what they call the Hansen Board Scholarship in athletics. And they done very well. They were distant runners in college. And then when the one boy, when they both graduated, he qualified for the national NAIA run full marathon down in Alabama, and it was a horrible day. It was like 90 when they finished the race. It cost Alec a day, a night in the hospital. He was so dehydrated, but from the outcome standpoint, he finished 6th in the nation out of 300 colleges. He was 6th in the nation, but even better than that, there was a kid from Midlands College, just located about 20 miles from Blair here, that he's blind, and he had a runner that ran with him like I did, with a strap that you put the strap on the person's, in my case, the left forearm, and you just hang on to that. And most of the time, you never use the strap much. You mostly do it through touching elbows. But anyway, this kid finished 8th in the nation, which is just unbelievable for a blind runner. And I know my grandson and him are buddies, anyway, they finished 6th to 8th, and they were both named All-Americans. So one that ran down in Alabama also got married after graduating from college. They ran the Mesa full marathon about 4 months ago. And I think Alec finished second in his age group, and Emily finished first in her age group and second in the race. And time of 2 hours and 54 minutes, which is pretty fast. And then they both qualified for the Boston Marathon, and they got back about a month ago, and both of them done unbelievably. Alec finished in the top 3.5% probably, and Emily finished in the top about, oh, I don't know, 0.1%. There was 25,000 runners, and of course they're the best 25. You have to qualify less than 3 hours to qualify, and they both, like I said, had an unbelievable race, and I suppose I'll be looking for another one to do. But anyway, that tells you I had two swimmers that swam in college. I had another boy, grandson, that ran cross country and soccer. And then one just graduated that played basketball for Doan University, and he got a job with the Minnesota Vikings football team. He's in the computer department. So all my grandkids, my six grandkids, all had great outcomes with their running or whatever they did. About done here. I'm kind of done a little now with talking about running so much. Some things in my life that is different. I don't know if you ever heard of Storyworth, but it's a company where you write an article every week for 52 weeks. My two grandkids gave it to me, and they give me a topic every week that I wrote about my life, and they wrote about my wife's life, and it really is neat. It comes out in a hard book, and you know what you hope that your kids and your grandkids, great grandkids will look at it and understand. I know my daughter and daughter-in-law got a copy of each article as it's produced, and my daughter says, "Gosh, there's things I read in there that I had no idea that what you did, what you were involved in." So it's really neat. It's I think it costs $100 to do it, but you come out with an unbelievable, a nice book. I just want to compliment my family. A lot of people say to me, "John, you have a great family," and I know I do. And you hope that you had some part of it. My wife worked for a nursing home for 38 years. I think she was the employee of the year, I think every other year for 38 years. The living room where the people go see their family or their friends is named the Angela Wick living room. And she retired about 15 years ago, and it's still named the Angela Wick living room. So like I say, she herself, I told you earlier, she had sits on a chair in the steps, and her joy in her life is her little dog Jeremy. He kind of keeps her going, it's a breed, a little. They're started over in Cuba and Spain. It's a lap dog. Anyway, about twice a week, he'll scream out and right in the middle of the night. It's part of the breed, and we were very reluctant to ever go to a motel because we're afraid somebody's going to think that somebody got stabbed. You know, I mean, and he'll if he doesn't know my wife is. Left the room, he'll wake up and all at once he'll start screaming just because my wife isn't there for him. So now you know I guess you don't have excuse not to do it because I'm probably older than anybody there, and I'll be 83 in June. My wife and I will be married 62 years in July. So we've had a good life and a great family. And I'll tell you this, so I never would want to go through what I've gone through in my lifetime. I mean, I had some tough times, trust me. And some of them coming out of the hospital field, I didn't feel I got treated very well. I mean, you know, it was, you're blind, so what are you going to do? And a lot of pressure. But I made it through. I got a lot of friends. I have this saying that to be a friend, you have to be a friend. To have a friend, you have to be a friend. A friend to me is somebody you can call at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, Jerry, I've got a problem. I need you. Something that I need you for. And that's what a friend is. I just over the years, and surprising, out of these 7 friends I'm talking about, the shortest period of time that I've had any of these friends, and of course, I haven't been around most of them because they live in different parts of the country or back home where I was from. Anyway, they're at least friends. It's been friends for over 30 years. I just want to bring up Alexa. I don't know how many of you got Alexa, but it's, in my opinion, the greatest technology piece other than my computer. It gives you, all the music you'd ever want. And now that Alexa, I got Alexa beside me here, and she wants to talk now. But anyway, you can get news, you can get regular radio. I get to listen to Indianapolis 500, the golf tournaments. I have it by conference and Big Ten conference, whatever. To me, it's the biggest. It's the best thing that I've ever. I've ever had, I think. I just wanted, during the last 5-6 years, I just wanted you to know, kind of let you know that, and again, I'm all talking all about this, about being blind. In the Ability One program, the Milton Samuelson Award, and that was back in D.C., and I was told that I was one of the runner-ups. The last 2 or 3 finishers, the award for the highest award you can get from a lion, Jay Sanders. Wait a minute. The Melvin Jones Award, and then about 2 years ago, I received the Nebraska Credit Union League, which is a trade organization for 60 credit unions, which I belong to the Creighton Federal Credit Union for 39 years. I was board chair for 6 years and vice chair for 6 years while I was blind. That's one of the bigger challenges to do, is to follow in a specific agenda with a lot of paragraphs to read. But anyway, I really got a lot out of that. I enjoyed it, and then the company, for example, that I work for, gave me a plaque with the seven top things they thought that I did during my time there. And the one thing I did, different banquets and stuff that where I was being recognized, my 3 youngest grandchildren were always there. And I wanted them there for the reason that I wanted them to see what Grandpa could do as a blind person. And I know they're proud of me, and I'm very proud of them. And, of course, they were the happiest. They enjoyed the food most. Whenever we went to those kind of banquets, the food was fantastic, and they enjoyed that, of course. I have to give a lot of credit to the Nebraska Commission for Blind and Visually Impaired. They've made a huge difference in my life in technology training. Today, I live a pretty doggone good life. I mean, I know probably everybody there is probably better talented technology-wise than I am, but I get by with sending emails and Word documents and Excel spreadsheets and responding to, I felt I'd done a lot of the grant writing. And so to me, employers, what really turns me off is employers that say, well, we use computers here. You're blind. What can you do? Well, how are you going to get to the restroom? You just want to box them across the head. There's once somebody understands the business you're in, a blind person can do a lot of things. We can't do handwritten stuff. That's true. But most everything today is all through technology anyway. So you can go on the internet. You can, you can develop programs. You can develop agendas for meetings. You can answer the phone. I mean, there's just so many things you can do. And I don't even, sometimes I forget I'm blind because you just go along with what you do in your life. And I listen to a book a week. That's what I try to do, is read a book a week. And it keeps me it's my sleeping pill a lot of times too. So every Wednesdays I go into Omaha with four retired teachers. We have breakfast. We kind of shop around the different restaurants, and they're a great bunch of guys. And I'm involved in the church personnel committee, plus the board, the Friends of the Commission, which is Nebraska Commission Blind and Vision Impaired. It's a for-profit 501c3, non-for-profit 501c3 that I've been very active in helping fundraising.
John, we may want to stop for questions because we have about 5 minutes.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Good. Anyway.
That's okay. It's been interesting.
Thanks. I hope you... Do we have some questions?
Well, I want to tell you that I, like your wife, have a cutie, and it's under my desk that I'm sitting at listening to you, and I've been using it throughout this presentation.
Oh.
Well, fantastic. I'll have to tell her that. She's got a partner.
Very good. Ms. Ruth, the question, please?
Yes.
And then Linda DiBerardino's after. John, right. can you please tell me, how do you use runners specifically? How do you find them? And do you have to train them to be responsive to your gait and style of running?
First of all, like I said, I have a strap that's about 18 inches long, and I have it sewed in a circle on both ends, and it goes over the person's forearm, and then I just hang on to it. And that's how we run. I mean, you pretty much know after a while the pace you both run, and understanding the language. I mean, just motion language, And like I say, the one is because I'd worked with this nurse, and then the other person was my neighbor she answered my ad in the paper, and I have other friends that I go out some of the time, but. I would say just reach out to, put a something in the paper or something like that.
That's a good idea. Craigslist probably has a section I could use. So Linda D, you got a question?
Before you do that, the other thing is that through the National Federation of the Blind, we have a sports and rec division. And I know we have lots of runners in the NFB. If you check for their listserv, you probably could find even more people to do it with. Mm-hmm.
Good idea. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Judy.
Thank you.
Linda?
Yes, John, you are a very, very good inspiration. May I ask your age?
I'll be 83 June.
Well, that's wonderful. You must be in terrific shape. And God bless you.
I stay in shape. And, to me, it's my reason to get up in the morning and get my day started off right. And I really don't notice a whole lot of difference from my workout I do today that I did 5 years ago or 10 years ago. I mean, I still feel pretty still feel pretty healthy, even though I had that AFib. You know, I'm still able to carry. But I feel
well,
like
I thank you. Thank you for participating in our call, and as I said, you are an absolutely inspiration. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm honored that you would say that, and
we can probably work in one. Well, you are. We can probably work in one or two more questions unless we don't have anybody waiting, but.
No one's waiting, but I do have one more, if I may, Ms. Ruth.
Okay, yes, go ahead.
Running on hills, John, do you do what I call like a dry run before a race if it's hilly so you get used to it?
I'm sorry, I can't quite hear you. You say, do I warm up before the race? Is that what you said?
Oh, no. So if you're going to run on a hill, do you do a dry run of that terrain to get used to it before the race, or you just take it as it comes?
Well, more or less, yeah, a lot of times you might walk up there. We may jog up there just to get warmed up, you know. I do that. Yeah. We generally do that. We have a hill. It was funny, this Carol, my runner, that her daughter used to do babysitting at the church, and the pastor's wife used to hassle her, you know, a little bit about how she done something or whatever the case. So we have this hill. We were talking about it that day, that when we were running up this hill, and so we called it Marge's Hill, because that's her name. So every time we ran up that hill, we'd say, well, we're going up Marge's Hill, you know. So, you know, I have a lot of fun. One thing about it, when like Carol or Terry, when you run with them for a lot of years, like 17 years, I think I know them better than I know my wife almost. I mean, it's you.
We'll pretend you didn't say that in honor of you.
Okay. No, but I'm just saying, it's amazing how good you get to know people. You know, you.
Yeah, I get your point. Yes.
Yeah.
We want to thank you. Yes, we want to thank you for spending this last hour with us. And someday maybe we will meet you at an NFB convention. And if not, we look forward to you. And if anytime you want to join our list, we'd be happy to have you. And thank you.
Well, if anybody just say, you know, if you want to reach out to Judy, and if somebody would like to, you know, reach out to me, call me or send me an email or whatever the case may be, I'd be very happy to respond to you. So.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Okay. So thank you, everybody. We've had a good year. We've had a sad year, too, from the people that we have lost. But we go on, and now we can get ready for convention. Thank you, everybody. Okay, Ruth.